This is Jake Rosen. I'm here with my son David, and we're talking about politics. Actually, we're arguing about politics. Well, sometimes we're talking, sometimes we're arguing. Why don't you join us? Did you and your friend get to watch the vice presidential debate, so-called debate, the other night? I know she didn't care much about the presidential debate. I wondered if she managed to rouse herself to watch the vice presidential debate.
Well, I didn't watch the vice presidential debate with anyone else, but I did watch it. I watched part of it, and I watched, you know, recurring coverage on it after the fact.
And so here's one thing I wonder, and, yep. I'm curious about. Nobody during that discussion said one word about climate change.
Well, I think in the presidential debate, they talked a lot about climate change, though, didn't they?
Well, no. As a matter of fact, they haven't talked about climate change in these debates at all. It hasn't been raised by anybody, not the questioners, nor the two of the candidates.
Their speeches and in the conventions, they talk a lot about climate change, right?
Ah, yes, that's true. But, you know, there's a real difference between the two. Donald Trump thinks it's all made up. He thinks it was a hoax perpetrated by the Chinese and by an international...
He said that's not true. When he was challenged on it, he said not true.
Oh, yes, but he'll always say that. But the point is that time after time, he's made the point that there is no such thing as climate change, and to the extent that anybody thinks there is, and the scientists, Chinese scientist cabal. So...
Sounds like one side. You could order like takeout, Chinese scientist cabal, you know, from a Chinese food restaurant.
Well, he's ordered it. There's no question about it. You know, the Obama administration, for whatever criticisms you can give him, has at least done things about it. He's been, especially in the last year, but really over the last number of years, he's been issuing all kinds of orders and regulatory moves try to rein in the use of fossil fuels. Inconsistent in many respects, more contradictory in some respects, but at least he points to it and says, listen, if we don't tackle this, the earth is going to come to an end for human life. You got to do something about it. So he's trying to do something about it. And Hillary Clinton seems to be interested in following up along those lines. Not as consistent and as strongly as before. But
so here's my perspective on it. I was being facetious, obviously. I did not hear them really give the type of credence to this subject, very important subject, most important subject, at any of their campaign events. Even our good friend Bernie Sanders doesn't do enough on climate change. And the truth is that we could have any type of social plan, you know, from feudalism to, you know, utopian egalitarian society. And if we ruin the climate, it doesn't matter. You know, the science is greater than, you know, the interpersonal relations of human beings.
Well, there are anaerobic bacteria that could live in a socialist world.
From a human-centric point of view, that is. I'm not incredibly laudatory of President Obama's moves on this topic. I think that he is able to get a lot of credit for not being as bad as the worst. And that is typically the case when you're dealing with this type of insane Republican Party, which they are insane. And as we speak today, Hurricane Matthew is bearing down on Florida. The governor, Rick Scott, ordered the evacuation of 2 million Floridians. The Daily News covered a story. Guy said that Hurricane Matthew is God's retribution for homosexuality.
Well, you know, that follows in a strain of comments by evangelical Christians. They propose that Katrina was also God's punishment for homosexuality. God apparently likes rain to wash out homosexuality.
It's funny, you know, God has other tools in the toolkit. He's got tornadoes, lightning, earthquakes, presumably dragons. I think they make a lot of appearances in the Bible. Beasts.
Homosexuality can only be washed out, and for that you need rain. Anyway, that's
all right. But you're distracting us. You know, you're not helping here. We have to talk now about climate change. And look, you know, when we went to Philadelphia together, we were both appalled by the amount of styrofoam that we saw. And there was a time when styrofoam, which is not a fossil fuel necessarily, but it, you know, pollutes.
Well, it's made of oil.
It's made of oil and doesn't biodegrade and is terrible. Was really banned in New York City. And now it's impossible, I think, to really believe that any of these, you know, politicians have followed up on the styrofoam ban. One way, shape, or form, small shop owners have, you know, said that, you know, we need jobs, and jobs come with profits, and profits come with styrofoam. And that extrapolated is the problem that we see across the board with environmental issues. We don't have any politicians who can stand up and have a point of view that is quote unquote moral or right. It all succumbs to, you know, another agenda. And even in the book by John Heinlein describing Obama's first term, Rahm Emanuel, while he was trying to pass the Health Care Act, said verbatim, this is a quote I'll never forget, you know, when concerned that he was giving up too much to get the bill passed, you know, in the environmental sphere, because, you know, it's all tit for tat, said the dolphins can wait till next year. And that's really the thing. It's like, you know, who cares about the most important thing, which is the, you know, destruction of our environment, if we can have some economic or, you know, political trade-off? And the truth is that science, you know, won't let that. We won't win. We'll lose.
Well, the point is that businessmen, and in that respect, Rahm Emanuel was reflecting a businessman's approach. Businessmen are in business for their own personal satisfaction, their own profit-making, or their company's profit. That's the standard by which you make a judgment. They're not in business for social good. As a matter of fact, they're not take social good into account, because it's irrelevant. The only thing that society means for a business is it's either a smaller or a larger market. And what they're concerned about is how to sell to that smaller or larger market as much as they can sell to that smaller or larger market. It's impossible for a businessman or any collection of businessmen to put in the forefront the interests of society as society, because that's not what binds them as businessmen. They're in business to make a
private
profit.
I think one thing we can do at this juncture is think about the, you know, the founding of the United States of America. I'm reading a great book by Ron Chernow on Hamilton, and, you know, I'm learning so much about, you know, the framing of the Constitution. Most people don't really know this stuff, and, you know, in 1776 we, you know, seceded from the British Commonwealth, the British Crown. But it wasn't until 1787, 11 years later, that the first constitutional convention was held. And even at that time, the biggest issue that was debated was the strength of state power versus a strong national government. And one of the reasons why people like George Washington and Alexander Hamilton wanted a strong state government, well, is because of the army. The only way they could have a military before that was by having a group of state militias, and they couldn't, you know, tax. So what would happen was duties would come in or go out through New York. They would be taxed in or, you know, out in New York. And then if they went to New Jersey or Connecticut, those states couldn't collect any money. So they were much poorer than the state that could collect money, and they couldn't, you know, divvy up the wealth. You know, this of profit exists not only when you're weighing it against the broader strokes of society. They also exist, you know, against other businessmen. And business is not broad-minded. It's completely short-sighted. And going back to our election, the business of our politicians is all – they're all morons. I mean, they're not morons in that they can't function. They're not morons on a moral level. They have, you know, complex and accomplished personal networks, but none of them has the thought processes to sacrifice the short-term accomplishment for a long-term growth pattern.
That's because they're all raised think that their task is to defend the interests of capitalism. And they think that the only way forward, they have internalized this. This is, unless they're total hypocrites, they sincerely believe that if they can make life better for businesses, then life will be better for everybody. And if you make life better for businesses, you're forced into a thought process which privileges the short term and says there's no long term into account. The long term is just the short term endlessly multiplied. That's their approach for most of them, also to all the things they do, including their politics. None of them are trained strategically. When a guy like Obama comes along, who is trained to think strategically, he's laughed at for not paying attention to the tactical. He tries to explain to them that the tactical flows from the strategic. You may not like the tactics at any minute, but the particular tactics at any minute has to come out of the strategic. And they laugh at him and they say, nonsense, we have to be strong at every step of the way. Well, that's the capitalist businessman's mentality. It doesn't work in life. It doesn't work in science. It doesn't work, period. It doesn't even work for business, because the businessman who only does that finds out down the line thing has come up that he can't cope with. It's too big for him. He hasn't anticipated. He hasn't laid the groundwork for it, and he goes under. But that's the way businessmen think. And anybody who tells you we need more businessmen in government is crazy. Businessmen are the least to be able to manage a society, much less give it a strategic outlook or a moral outlook that's acceptable to human life. And the business of climate change is proof of it. Because in climate, where climate change is concerned, you got to be ruthless with certain businesses. They shouldn't exist because they kill human life. And no point in saying, well, they produce jobs, gravediggers' jobs, and you're digging your own grave.
And, you know, the idea that something that creates jobs is good. I mean, what we've done in this country is we've destroyed a society. And what does that mean? You know, we belittle the Islamic states of this world. The Islamic states of this world have something, you know, that may not be great, but they at least have something that we don't have at all, which is a defined social order. And we, you know, say, well, that the social order is regressive, repressive, oppressive, and, you know, not going to lead to innovation, freedom of thought, you know, freedom of capital, freedom of lots of things. And but in exchange, we say that all social order is, you know, arbitrary and shouldn't be given any credence to. And, you know, the truth is that it's anathema to say that, you know, people should learn things that they can do in as a job, or people should study, you know, 10 times more science, or, you know, the entirety of our humanity should be, you know, more educated in science, or everyone should have health care, or, you know, people shouldn't have incredible wealth that, you know, they can never spend, or any of these things that if we had social values that were more universal, the way that religion does, except that we might reject those religious ideals, but we should not reject ideals in and of themselves. And that's what we see with this big schism in this country. The religious people of this country are not bad people. They just want to have a social order. And the secular people say, what social order? Who cares? It's all the same. But it's not all the same.
Well, that's right. The Ayn Rand, the libertarian types, the free market types, they trumpet that there is no society. There's only individuals. That's what Margaret Thatcher, the late British Prime Minister, was famous for saying. She says there's no such thing as society. There's only individuals. Nonsense. Individuals, human individuals, can only exist as individuals within society and as a product of their society. Whether they are in the main good individuals or bad individuals is a reflection of whether their society is a good society that promotes humanitarian ideals and allows people to develop and flourish, or it's a rotten society where inequality, exploitation is characteristic. So what you're saying is completely true. Religion in this case, in the sense that in a rotten society, emphasizes good social values, although it produces these good social values in an imaginary way. It assumes that some non-existent God has decreed some impossible utopia, and that's what we're aiming for. That part is ridiculous. But the part that there should be a collectivity that we belong to, that kicks off and for each other in nurture buddy, that, of course, is what's appealing to people. And that's true. That's a good thing. But the only way you can achieve that in life is by ending exploitation, ending people doing things for their own private profit. It can't in life on this earth if you allow people to do things for their private profit.
Well, so with all of that said, let us now talk. And I just want to say there is one American social ideal that we all hold true. And that is that you should be thin and have washboard abs. That is the collective religion of secular America. Physical fitness. You're shameful if you are not physically peak performer. And in fact, you can be completely without any other values if you're a peak physical performer. I mean, that is our exalted state. Physical fitness is king.
Well, that's true. That's true. And it's part of the emphasis on the individual and the uniqueness of the individual. Individual being, attention being paid to the individual as the only important part of life and as the essence of life. So therefore, your individual achievement is what's important. And what could be more of an individual achievement than your own abs? That's, it takes for granted. So therefore, you should watch sports, not do sports, because after all, most people can't achieve the kind of muscular tone that a handful of favored physical types can. The rest of us, watch it. It's part of a consumer society. It's not part of a society in which everybody participates to the best of his ability and to achieve the maximum of his satisfaction. That doesn't count. What you got to be is better than anybody else. And if you can't be better than anybody, then watch everybody else. Consume it and get your enjoyment because you're a fan of this guy or that woman or that team. And when they rise, you rise. And if they fall, you fall. Well, that's life in America. That's sports. That's the whole mania of professionals and college sports. It's a horrible life. It's an expression and part and parcel of a horrible approach to life.
And it's tough. You think a lot of people like sports, like me. But, you know, it's.
No. I'm all for liking. I'm for participating in the sport. But you don't have to be as good as the best in order to enjoy playing basketball or football or baseball or swimming. You don't have to be a beater in order to get satisfaction and to bring joy to everybody. All you got to do is do the best you can do. That's all. And that's wonderful. But that's not what is proclaimed as the point. The point is to be the best in the world. Leave your family, leave your society, go into some crackpot training camp in which every living minute is devoted to making you into an automaton, a robot that can run or shoot or whatever the sport is that you're doing. It's an human approach to a human activity.
Well, with all of that as background music, if you will, now, in a world where climate change is not paramount, in a world where the leading figures of 50% of the nation, or at least the Republican Party, believe in magic or bullshit or whatever. Let's talk about vice president debate between Tim Kaine and Mike Pence.
Well, what do you think of it?
Well, I think Tim Kaine has more talent than he showed. I think that he, in a world where energy, and we've talked about identity politics and energy a lot, so important, like, are on, you know, the count in these things. He didn't have the right. He tries to be this really likable guy. He sacrificed. He, you know, his faith this and speaks Spanish that and blah blah blah. But then when he wanted to turn that off and be this guy who, you know, held the Republicans to the fire as part of a strategy that they could then juxtapose these guys after the fact, contradicting each other or at least being uncomfortable. I don't think he, you know, came off as sharp or charismatic. You know, maybe he didn't need to be because maybe nobody was really paying attention. He only needed to hurt the other guy. Pence did a...
Well, I mean, his strategy, obviously, he right. had a strategy going into it. His strategy going into it was to say to Pence, your guy has said things that are not only unbelievable, they're demonstrably wrong. He said the following, it's wrong, and in some cases, it's evil. How can you defend it? And Pence, the evangelical Christian, the man who was calm and smooth and collected, responded in every case by saying, he didn't say that. Where everybody who was paying attention and wasn't asleep knew that he had said it.
But doing so intoned with the confidence that it didn't matter.
Well, that's right. It didn't matter. His tone. He didn't say it, and B, so what?
People say things.
Right?
We're not really racist.
After Cain nailed him to the wall on it by quoting chapter and verse what Trump said, Pence comes back and says, well, he's not a practiced professional politician like you. Well, like Pence, too. But what has that got to do with anything? If I was talking caca, if the guy was talking racism, if the guy was talking superstition, if the guy was talking ignorance, he was talking caca, racism, superstition, and ignorance, whether or not he's a practiced politician. And, of course, if you've signed on to it to be his enabler, his supporter, you got to have some answer better than, well, he never said it.
But... Because I caught that again and again.
Well, the neither the Cain was frustrated. You could see that. Cain really didn't know what to do in the face of somebody who, when you said to him, the light is on, says, no, we're sitting in the dark. Say about that. Except to attack him.
Except,
and to say, Mr. Pence, you're supporting the same nonsense.
Except that's only because these folks have a North Star, which is approval ratings and polls. They don't have, going back to our earlier conversation, a guiding light of principles that they have real conviction in. They believe only that their principles can be fulfilled if they have public support, and a fleeting public support at that. And let's face it, all these people are fundamentalist Christians. I mean... they're all fundamentalist Christians. Tim Kaine's a fundamentalist Christian. Hillary Clinton,
yes, he is,
claims to be a fundamentalist Christian, and her detractors say she's not a fundamentalist Christian. And who knows what she is? I mean, who knows what any of these people are? We say that, you and I say that, you know, these people are insane, and it's hard to believe that they say that they believe what they believe. It's just hard to, you know, it's like Mike Pence. Oh, we didn't really mean that. I mean, that's kind of like their religion. They don't really mean it, except they do mean it. You're either with us or you're not with us, and when we're together, we mean it, unless we don't mean it. Who knows?
So what do you expect will happen in the debate? Now, I know this particular show that we're doing right now is going to be broadcast immediately after the debate, but nonetheless, we have to sort of project. What do you think will happen when...
My money's on Trump this time. Two couple reasons. One is, I believe the arc of it is such that you know, the pendulum will shift back to him. I think that he will learn from his mistakes, and I think, on the other hand, Clinton, really susceptible, really really weak, doesn't have a good sense of the crowd, the bigger crowd or the local crowd.
You know, we'll
struggles.
I don't know if she's good at these town meeting debates. I don't know what the story is about her. But what I do know is, despite the fact that the papers have been full of columnists writing about how Trump has got to shape up and get training and learn how to do it and learn from his mistakes, in the time between the last debate and the current debate, he hasn't done anything. He hasn't taken any training. He hasn't done any practice.
Well, he's campaigned in town halls.
One. And even two. But campaigning at a town hall is a lot different than being tutored. It may be that Chris Christie came and talked to him. Of course, Chris Christie is very good at town hall type things. He made his reputation in Jersey by his appearances in town hall type events. And it may very well be that Chris Christie, a two-day-a-week private breakfast that he has with Trump, tells Donald, listen, here's what you got to do. But you know what? I've tried to learn skills of one sort or another, and the only way you really learn it is by doing it. You got to actually have a mock
session. See, but this is the problem with Clinton. This is Clinton's problem. She's going to try to beat him. Cain tried to beat Pence. They each think, if I could just catch them in a lie, they'll get flustered, they'll lose their nerve. But she's not going to be able to get to Trump. Because Trump doesn't care. Trump only knows that if he keeps his composure, it doesn't matter what he says. And she doesn't get that.
Well, no, I think she does get that. That's what she did to him in the first debate. She made him lose his composure. I think she'll figure out a way to make him lose his composure this time, too. Because I don't think in the end, yeah, he'll be good for the first half hour. He's good for half hour. He's like a pitcher that's good for three innings. But by the time you get to the fifth inning, you got to have a relief pitcher. But in this situation, there's no relief pitcher. He's got to do the whole nine innings. After the second inning, he's out.
What do you think of the reports that he was jealous of Mike Pence performing? Think that's true?
Yeah, I think he's a competitive guy on every level. I think he's a small-minded egoist, and he doesn't like any getting publicity or getting anything that's the least bit better than he. If your current girlfriend happens to be a stunning woman, and you happen to get invited to a party with him, and she's better looking than Melania, he's going to be jealous, and he'll try to hit on her.
Pence.
That's what I think.
What did you think about Mike Pence? You know, he was very good. He was my first hire, really. That's the thing about Trump that he doesn't get. You can't fire Mike Pence once you hire him. You can never fire the people that you hire in these jobs. He's already fired three campaign managers.
That's right. Well, he had to. They you know, one roughed up, one got caught being the enabling agent for one of the most horrible dictators in Europe. So, it didn't look good for him. They had to get rid of him. Okay. Next time we meet, evaluate what they did in this debate, Hillary and Donald, and we can see if you were right in your forecast or if my pessimism was right. And then we'll see. And by the way, do you really think these debates matter?
Well, I think if 82 million people watch the first debate, then it can't not matter. And if it doesn't not matter, then it does matter. But I think a bigger point before is more salient. This political system is broken. These politics are poor. These politicians are crazy, even though they seem sane, rational, and successful and qualified. They're not dealing with the issues that we need them to deal with. They're not speaking to anyone, let alone enough people. And, you know, none of these guys really takes it upon themselves to be high-minded. They're not high-minded. They're low-minded.
And I don't think you're right. I don't think they're crazy. I think they are sincere, intelligent, devoted spokespeople who want to develop and further and defend a social system which is crazy. And that's why they seem crazy. Anyway, see you next week.
Okay, see you then.